That was why assassins liked to use a 22. But even with only a 22's small entrance wound, there was still some blood. The shower curtain contained what blood there was as the men were dragged through the house until the bodies were in the basement. The outdoor hose and then rains would wash away what little there was outside. Angela again pulled out the hose and washed down the steps and basement floor. By this time, her feet were freezing. She still had the problem of what to do with Babington's car. 44. Angela went back upstairs and finally took a hot shower. She shivered under the stream of water until it banished the chill. She took special care to wash her hair thoroughly. She dressed in jeans and a longer top to hide the gun she holstered in her waistband. Worried about leaving any evidence in Babington's car, she put on a hoodie and drew the drawstring tight around her face. She wanted to make sure she didn't leave any of her hairs in his car. She picked up the car keys with a little finger through the key ring. Not wanting to leave any fingerprints, she retrieved a pair of disposable gloves and stuffed them in a pocket. She left her phone at home on her nightstand, for the same reason Babington didn't bring his phone. She didn't want anyone to be able to track its position to where she would leave his car. After she locked her front door, she pulled on the gloves, opened the car door, and started Babington's car. She stopped at the entrance to her drive and put the cable back up to make sure no one wandered up her drive. It was late in the evening, but not so late that people driving around would be viewed suspiciously. There was no traffic on the road leading away from her house. There rarely was. But once she got into town, the traffic started getting heavier. She didn't want to take the chance of having someone recognize John Babington's car with her driving it, so she took side streets, rather than four-lane roads where people could pull up beside her at traffic lights. Once she reached an upscale motel near downtown, she parked on a side street right around the corner. The parking lot of the motel was likely to have surveillance cameras. She didn't want to be recorded driving or getting out of Babington's car. She kept her hood up over her head in case there were any cameras pointed out at the street she intended to walk down just around the corner from the motel after leaving the car. She hoped that when the car was eventually found, the police would theorize that John Babington had been going to a late-night liaison and parked where his car wouldn't be seen on the motel's cameras, and that he was then robbed, taken somewhere else to be murdered, and his body dumped. With the density of the surrounding forests just outside town, that happened occasionally, and the bodies were rarely found. That was, in fact, what Owen had done. He had dumped his victim's body like trash. If not for Angela, seeing in his eyes what he had done, Carrie Stratton likely would never have been found. Angela might have been born broken, born a freak. But at least she could use that for something good. Angela locked Babington's car with the remote. She peeled off the disposable gloves and put them in the pocket of her jeans along with the car keys. Later, she would toss the keys and gloves down the hellhole. She kept her head down, hood up, and started walking. When the strip mall finally came into sight, Angela was relieved to see that the lights were still on at Drenovich Tactical. She had ditched the car where she had, because that motel was only a mile and a half from Nate's place. Nate had done a good job teaching her what she needed to know, but now she needed him for something else. She pushed back the hood and opened the door. Nate was sitting alone at the desk, doing paperwork. He stood in surprise.
"Angela, what are you doing here at this hour?"
Angela stuffed her hands in the pockets of the hoodie. "I need a favor." Nate shrugged.
"Sure. Anything. What do you need?"
"I need a ride home, if it's not too much trouble."
"No problem. But what are you doing here? Did your truck break down or something?"
"No, it's not that. I had a date. The guy turned out to be a real jerk. I didn't want to do what he had had in mind, so I dumped him. Now I find myself without a ride home. I can walk if it's too much trouble. A cab would have left records, so that was out. It would be an awfully long walk, so she had been hoping Nate could drive her home. But she had also been prepared to walk if he hadn't been at work or couldn't give her a lift. Nate opened a drawer and retrieved his car keys.
It's the least I can do.
What do you mean? He gestured around the empty room.
Business has been slow. Seems like every strip mall has a martial arts school next to a nail salon. Even Malcolm stopped showing up. Teaching you kept my head above water.
I should hope so. You were charging me enough. He smiled.
I was. I hope it was worth it.
It was, she hastened to add, along with a smile.
I wish you were still taking lessons. It paid some bills.
He held a hand out toward the door.
My car is right outside.
Nate didn't know where she lived, so Angela had to give him directions as they drove out of town and toward her house. When they finally reached her driveway, she had him pull off the road and stop just before the cable. He was surprised to see that she lived outside Milford Falls in such a remote place. Thanks for the ride, Nate. You're a lifesaver.
Stop seeing jerks and you won't need rides home.
Angela couldn't help smiling.
I'm glad that at least I was able to teach you how to handle trouble if you end up in a bad situation.
Nate gestured at her drive.
How about... I don't know. How about you show me your place?
It's been a long day. Maybe some other time.
Oh. Okay. Sure.
He seemed deflated. She didn't want to leave it like that. You know the place I tend bar?
Yeah. Barry's place.
Well, some guys tortured him and beat him really bad.
My God. That's terrible. Why would they do that?
I don't know. She waved off the question to get back on topic. He's in the hospital, and right now we don't know if he's going to make it.
I'm so sorry to hear that. If they wanted to rob him, why didn't they just rob him? Why would they torture him?
She couldn't tell him that he was tortured to find out where the driveway was where they were sitting at that moment. She couldn't help feeling guilty about Barry. I don't know, she lied again, as she ran her finger back and forth over a piece of chrome on the center console. Listen, Barry's in bad shape. Even if he makes it, it's going to be quite a while until he is back on his feet. I don't want him to lose his bar in the meantime. Me and some of the other girls are going to open the bar tomorrow and keep it up and running for him. You know, until he gets better. We're hoping to get people to come in and support his business.
That sounds like a great idea.
So, I need to get some sleep.
Oh, sure, I understand. Maybe some other time.
She nodded without committing. We're going in early tomorrow to see about keeping his place afloat.
Okay. Well, I think that's a great idea. I guess I'd better let you get some sleep then. It was great getting to see you again, Angela.
She popped open the door, but then paused. Hey, listen, I just had an idea. She hoped not to make a habit of lying to him, but it seemed the most expedient solution. Us girls could use a guy there to kind of watch over things while we're working.
You mean you need a bouncer?
Yeah, I guess. Check IDs, that kind of thing. Make sure none of the guys get grabby with us since Barry isn't there watching over things. He used to look out for the girls that work for him. She looked up into his eyes. It would be great if you could do that for us.
I don't know. I have my own business to run.
You said your business is really slow right now. If you would do this, we'd pay you. I'd share my tips with you. I'm sure the other girls would appreciate having you watch over them, and they'd chip in as well. I bet you'd make more money than you do teaching martial arts. And it would only be until Barry gets better, so maybe you could put a gone on vacation sign on your door or something. It might make you enough money to get ahead on your bills.
Nate tapped a thumb on the steering wheel as he considered.
Business has been pretty slow.
I'd feel better if it was a face I knew who was watching over the girls, rather than a stranger.
What about you?
She flicked a hand, dismissing the thought.
Nah.
Some guy taught me to take care of myself. I'm good. He chuckled at that before turning serious again.
You really want me to do it?
She turned back to meet his gaze.
Yes. I really would like it if you would.
He gave her a single nod.
Then I'll do it. When do we start?
I'm hoping we can get the place open tomorrow evening by around 5. After that, afternoons until closing. All of us will be there working to start to make sure we have things running smoothly.
Then I guess I'll see you tomorrow evening.
Angela kissed her finger and then pressed the kiss to his cheek. Thanks, Nate. See you then. He stayed and watched her walk up her drive until she got to the trees. She turned and waved, and he finally drove off. 45.
Jack parked his rental car in the crowded parking lot of the bar called Barry's Place, where he knew Angela Constantine worked as a bartender. He didn't know if she was working that night, but it was the easiest place to start looking for her. The bar was a squat concrete block building that looked like it hadn't been painted in several decades. At night, under the light of the single streetlight, it was hard telling what the original color had been. He thought it might be a faded pink, but there was no telling for sure. A colorful, brightly lit beer sign glowed in the only window. On the gloomy road, no one would be able to miss it. The place gave him the impression of a despairing outpost at the edge of civilization, where the great trackless forest began, a place where people stopped for good cheer and liquid bravery before facing the dark and dangerous unknown just beyond. That was an illusion, of course, but Jack had learned over the years to take account of such impressions, along with the vague connections he tracked. They often had meaning and purpose that could only be understood in the context of unfolding events. Those connections helped keep him alive while hunting savages that did not belong among civilized men. Hung above the window of the bar, there was a hand-painted canvas banner that said, "Get well soon, Barry." Jack wondered what that was about. Another hand-painted sign said that ladies would get their first drink for free. It appeared to be working, as Jack saw three women in short dresses going into the place. They looked overdressed for the kind of dive bar it looked to be, but on the other hand, dive bars seemed to be coming into vogue. Some people were drawn to places that were fashionably dangerous. Much like a roller coaster ride, it let them have a taste of peril without the high risk that peril usually entailed. Occasionally, those flitting moths got burned in the flame they were drawn to. By the kinds of lowered cars and jacked-up trucks he saw in the lot, he guessed that the free drinks that drew women had in turn drawn a lot of men as well, which in turn drew more women. It was a witch's brew of trouble. Jack stood outside for a time, leaning against his car, arms folded, watching. Every time the door opened, rock music spilled out into the parking lot, seeming out of place in the surrounding forest setting. Two men protested loudly as they were escorted out by a bouncer. When the bouncer went back in and the door closed, it muted the music to a muffled bass beat. The drunk pair got in their car and spun their tires all the way out of the parking lot. It was only luck, not skill, that kept them from hitting anything. Jack continued to wait, watching the activity going in and out. Or maybe he was just hesitating. It was always hard for him to know how to approach someone he suspected of having the rare ability to recognize killers. Some of those people didn't want to hear what he had to say. Some, like Kate, had been hard to convince but smart enough to listen. Those who had a trace of the ability occasionally thought of it as normal, something they thought that everyone could do. It was anything but normal, and it grew rarer all the time as super predators killed off anyone they found with the ability.
The biggest problem was the hostility he sometimes encountered. Some people didn't like him invading their lives with what they considered crazy notions. Their ability had never manifested itself, so they thought he was a nutcase. He always did his best to convince them to at least listen to him, because the chances were that sooner or later one of those rare super predators would come along and slaughter them. He tried to help them come to terms with their ability. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. He often wished he could simply leave these people alone to live their lives. Most weren't aware of their rare vision. Others viewed it as a freak feeling they'd had once without knowing for sure if it was true or not. Often, because it scared them, they foolishly ignored the feeling. Since it only happened to them once and there was no way to confirm their feeling, it came across to them as merely fearing a dangerous-looking person. Most of the time, they wanted nothing more than to deny what they had felt so they could forget the incident. But all Jack had to do was look into their eyes and he could see it in them. Jack couldn't see killers for who they were. His singular ability was confined to recognizing these people who had the ability to recognize killers. As far as he knew, he was the only one of his kind. Because of that, he felt an obligation to use his ability to try to save lives. But he often wished he could just leave these people alone. The only problem was that there were super predators who could also recognize them for their ability. That kind liked nothing more than to eliminate those individuals, the way a wolf liked to be rid of the sheepdog. This rare ability was genetic, so it often passed down in families. Because of that, those super predators would sometimes kill the entire family to wipe out that trait. Jack wished he could leave this woman, Angela, alone to live her life in this backwater town. In such a small city, he expected she had never actually encountered a killer. But he was also aware that people with this ability somehow drew predators to them. He didn't know how or why, he only knew that they did. He also knew that members of Angela Constantine's family, both in America and in Italy, had already been murdered by a super predator named Cassiel. Since Cassiel was back in the United States, it was certainly possible that he would come after Angela or her mother. From what Jack had learned about Sally Constantine, he was far more concerned about Angela. On top of that, there were troubling connections that he had to look into. Jack sighed as he started across the parking lot, sorry that he was going to have to intrude in this woman's life and possibly scare the wits out of her with talk of killers. He hated it when that happened. What weighed him down the most was that it turned out far too often that the people he found ended up murdered. After all, those super predators were also hunting them. Cassiel already had the scent of blood from this family. Jack often went to sleep wishing he had never found Uziel and a whole list of others like him who were now dead. He knew that by doing what he did, he was able to save lives, but he often went to sleep seeing in his mind's eye the tragic, bloody end to the lives of people he had found, or found too late. Jack pulled open the dented metal door to the bar and was immediately hit by a wall of sound from the loud music and the talking and laughter. Once inside, he stood off to the side in the back for a time, taking in the place, letting his eyes adjust to the rather dim light. There was a doorway to the side of the bar, probably going to a stockroom and office in back. A row of neon signs for different beer brands and various kinds of hard liquor lined the back wall, above shelves packed with bottles. In the center of the ceiling, a rotating ball sent little spots of light dancing around the room, playing over all the people, making them seem to melt together into a single, undulating mass. Christmas lights were strung at the top of the walls all around the room. The dark-painted concrete floor was scuffed and scratched. Framed chalkboards were hung on the wall to the right. Drink specials and menus of a few light appetizers were written in chalk of various colors. But it was the neon lights behind the bar, and others around the room, most of them red, that cast their crimson spell over the place. They made the bar intimate and rather cozy, despite the place being decidedly on the sleazy side. It was a dive, but a dive with an oddly homey appeal. Young women in short skirts or cut-off shorts teetered on high heels as they delivered trays of drinks to tables around the room. Jack had one photo of Angela Constantine from her driver's license and another from the bond for her courier service, so he had a pretty good idea of who he was looking for. He finally spotted her, behind the bar, making drinks for the waitresses circulating around the room, as well as tending to the men lined up on bar stools. She didn't have blue hair like on her driver's license. It was now platinum blonde, tipped in red. It looked like she had dipped the ends of her hair in blood that had gradually dissipated as it soaked upward into the platinum. With that hair, she stood out from everyone else in the room. She was impossible to miss. From a distance, he couldn't really get a good look at her eyes, so he wove his way across the room full of people. He found an empty stool down at the end of the bar, where it turned a corner to close off that end of the bar. It left just enough room for one bar stool. Being where it was, around the corner at the end, it afforded him a view down the length of the bar and behind it. The seat would allow him to get a better look so he could assess Angela Constantine. Even though he had seen a couple of photos of her, she was not at all what he expected. Not in the least. She was altogether more than he had expected. She had on blue jean shorts with pockets hanging down below the cut-off legs. Her open front shirt, over a tube top, showed her navel and a lot of territory below it before reaching the low top of the shorts. Most of all, her shorts showed off her stunning long legs to full advantage. Her shorts didn't leave much to the imagination about what little they did cover. She had on suede boots that came up almost to her knees and only served to help draw attention to the length of her bare legs. When she came closer to serve a guy sitting not too far away, Jack saw that she had several tattoos on her arms, but they were unlike any tattoos he had ever seen before. They were not done as art or decoration. Each was small, and they clearly were not intended for others to admire. They obviously had some meaning to her, and that's all they were there for. They were personal. On the inside of each wrist was a small tattoo of a delicate feather. Those were the only slightly decorative tattoos of the lot, and yet they were too small to be decoration. It looked more like it was meant to be a reminder to herself. He guessed it was in reference to her name, which meant angel in Italian. Her fingernails weren't long, but they were painted a deep blood red. The back of her ear was lined with rings. Above the black mascara and eyeliner was a creamy black eyeshadow with little flecks of copper in it. Her lipstick was a moist, rich, luscious red. She could easily be featured in an ad for makeup, especially lipstick. She had that achingly evocative model look. He would never have expected it from the kinds of elements she had put together, but now that he saw her up closer, he realized that her platinum hair fit perfectly with the rest of her, creating a complete, totally unique look. She was staggeringly attractive. But when she turned more in his direction, he almost fell off his stool when he saw her one large tattoo that was clearly meant for people to see. At first, from the side, he had thought it was a dark-colored choker or tall neckband of some sort, but it wasn't. It was a tattoo. Across her throat were the words, "Dark Angel," big enough that he could clearly read them, even from a distance. This was not a shy girl. This was an intimidating woman. When she finally came down to the end of the bar to see what she could get him, her gaze met his. For a fraction of a second, she paused as she saw his eyes. In that instant, he could tell that she recognized in his eyes that he had killed people. In his case, they were predators, not innocent people. If she was aware of her ability, she would be able to grasp the distinction by what she saw in his eyes. As stunningly beautiful as she was, Her eyes were possibly the most remarkable feature about her. It was stone-cold obvious to him that she had the ability to recognize killers. But there was so much more. She leaned over the bar to be heard over the music.
What can I get you?
He had already decided on the straightforward approach, but he couldn't help being mesmerized by her eyes, by her very presence. He was used to seeing people who could recognize killers, but her eyes were all of that, and a whole world of difference more.
I need to talk to you about the kind of men you can recognize with those eyes of yours.
She leaned in closer on one elbow.
Fuck off.
That had not been what he expected.
Listen to me. I need... You heard the lady,
a man standing just over his right shoulder said.
You need to leave.
Jack could tell that the bouncer was not someone to be taken lightly. This was not the time or place to press the issue. Starting something with a bouncer wouldn't help him talk with her. Besides, his intent was to help people, not hurt them. He reluctantly slid off the bar stool. He turned back to see Angela standing motionless, watching him.
This is more important than you realize, he said. Please, think it over.
Before the bouncer could force him out, Jack left. 46. Jack decided to sit in his car and wait for Angela Constantine to get off work. Now that he'd found her, he didn't want to lose contact and have her go to ground. He'd spooked people before, and then had a hell of a time reconnecting with them. Several times he had found them again only after they had been murdered. Although they might be able to recognize them, these people, after all, didn't know how to deal with killers. Jack hadn't eaten since earlier in the day, and his stomach was growling. He'd slept most of the time on the Israeli diplomatic jet as it flew all night from Israel to New York, but it wasn't a restful sleep. They went into JFK Airport to clear customs and let off a couple of diplomatic staff personnel to go meet with Gilad Ben Ami in New York City. That delegation was the cover story, anyway. They could have gotten special diplomatic clearance and not have had to go into JFK, but Ehud thought it better if they didn't unduly raise the suspicion of U.S. intel that they were conducting a mission of some kind. Ehud had said that if there really was something important going on that Jack needed to investigate, then U.S. intel could possibly become a hindrance, and or even potentially blow Jack's cover by unmasking his identity. Such leaks and unmaskings were becoming more and more common, and had already gotten several agents killed. There were super predators who, besides hunting people with the special ability to recognize killers, also hunted Jack. That was a big reason he stayed off the grid. If those predators could somehow find him and eliminate him, it would be far easier to kill the people he was trying to protect. If anyone in any of the American intelligence services leaked information about Jack to the press, those predators would then have a much easier time of finding him. The press loved printing spy stories and revealing names. The consequences were unimportant to them. Some in the intel agencies wished those consequences on him, and so they were only too eager to leak to the press. There were many in the press who loved nothing more than to help get an undercover operative killed. It made them feel important. They cared more about puffing themselves up than about the lives their reckless reporting cost. On top of that, there were hundreds of thousands of people with top-secret clearances who shouldn't have them. Jack's expertise was not politically correct, so there were those who would be only too eager to destroy his ability to find the kind of people he looked for. There were even those who would leak the story or reveal his name in the hopes of getting him killed. Political correctness didn't extend to the lives of those they didn't like. Jack's safety, and thus the safety of those he tried to help, depended on him remaining a ghost. After clearing customs at JFK, by mid-afternoon they had hopped over to the Elmira Corning Regional Airport in central New York State, where he had a car waiting for him.
He knew, of course, that American intel would be tracking an Israeli plane, so Ehud managed to let it be known that it was a vacation flight to the Finger Lakes region for some of their people. After getting his car, Jack had parked it and then walked until he found a used car lot with an older Ford that seemed to be in good running condition. He paid cash for it and used one of his fake IDs to make the purchase. If the intel services were tracking his rental car, which he assumed they were, that would break the link with a dead end, at least for a time. Jack had been in a hurry to get to Milford Falls and find Angela Constantine, so he had filled his new car with gas and driven the rest of the way without stopping. All he had with him was a protein bar and a bottle of water that he'd picked up at the gas station. Now that he was waiting for Angela to come out, he didn't want to leave to go get something more to eat, so he ate the bar slowly to make it last. He briefly considered using the time to go see Sally Constantine, but his experience told him that Angela was the one he needed to talk to, and he feared losing contact with her. After having seen her eyes, he knew beyond a shadow of doubt that she was the one. He didn't know if she might get off work any moment, or not, until the bar closed. He had the truck she drove in sight so that he wouldn't miss her leaving. He was determined to stay there until she came out. A little after 1 a.m., she finally emerged from the bar and walked toward her truck. The bar was still open, and the lot had about 24 customer cars still there. Jack got out of his car and made his way toward her pickup. She saw him coming. She'd seen him the first moment she came out of Barry's place, but that was okay, because he wanted her to see him. He didn't want to look like some psycho trying to sneak up on her. As she reached her truck, he walked up on the passenger side so she would feel safer with the truck between them. He knew that a woman who was this attractive and dressed the way she did in those shorts and boots undoubtedly had to deal with guys hitting on her all the time. She glared at him from the other side of the truck. "I thought I told you to get lost." Jack held up a hand in confession.
"You did. Look, Miss Constantine, I've come a long way to speak with you. Just let me show you one photo. One. And then if you still want me to leave, I will. I swear."
"Not interested," she said as she unlocked her truck. He spread his hands to show her that he wasn't holding a weapon.
"Just one photo, that's all. I'll stand over here, and you can stay over there, and I'll slide it across the hood of your truck so you can look at it."
She watched him with those eyes that had him sweating. "Why? What is this photo supposed to tell me? That I should go out dancing with you?" Jack couldn't help smiling at the way she'd put it.
"No, I'm not trying to get you to go out with me. I'm not hitting on you, I swear. Just take a look at it, okay? This is really important."
Her steady gaze was still locked on him. "Important to who? To you or to me?"
"Just look at it. Would you please?"
He hated the way he sounded like he was begging, but he supposed he was. She let out a deep breath and stepped from the driver's door to the opposite side of the hood of her truck from where Jack stood waiting. "And once I look at this photo, then will you leave me the hell alone?" Jack nodded his sincerity.
"If you want me to, yes."
"All right. Show me this super-duper special fucking photo." Jack pulled the photo out of his shirt pocket. It had been printed on photo paper from a negative. Only a photo printed on photo paper from a negative would work for people with the ability he now knew Angela had. Any other kind of digital photo or electronic representation lost some essential quality that they would otherwise be able to see in a killer's eyes. Those other types of photos were useless for Jack's work. For a person with Angela's ability to recognize a killer, if she couldn't see him in person, then the photo had to be a photo printed on photo paper from a real negative. Jack set the photo down on the hood of the truck, turned it to face toward Angela, and with two fingers carefully slid it toward her across the gray primer hood of her truck. Angela finally took her eyes off him, just long enough to lean in a little and glance down at the photo. He didn't think she had looked at it for a full second, when she twisted her arm back and in a lightning-fast move came back up with a gun. Before he knew it, she had it pointed right between his eyes. The click he had heard was the safety coming off as the weapon came out of her holster. Jack froze. Even more disturbing, that gun had a suppressor. By how steady the weapon was in her hands, he had no doubt that she knew how to use it. Her first finger wasn't resting along the side of the slide, which would have been somewhat less alarming, but was instead on the trigger. One twitch, and he would be dead. This stunningly gorgeous young woman was more than she at first appeared. A lot more. Slowly, not making any fast moves, Jack put his hands up.
"Where is he?"
she hissed.
"Tell me where I can find him."
This girl was a live hand grenade wrapped in a lollipop shell. Without realizing it, he had just pulled the pin. 47. Jack tried to keep his voice calm.
"What do you see, Miss Constantine, when you look at this photo, when you look at his eyes?"
"Where is he?"
she screamed.
"I don't know. I'm trying to find him myself. That's why I wanted you to look at the photo. I was hoping you might be able to help."
Jack kept his hands up, hoping she wouldn't shoot him. He wasn't entirely confident of that.
"Do you know this man?"
"No. I've never seen him before."
Jack let one hand come down just enough to gesture toward the photo lying in front of her on the hood of the truck.
"Miss Constantine, can you tell me what you see when you look at this man?"
"What are you, some kind of fucking cop?"
"No,
I'm not any kind of cop or anything like that. Please, tell me what you saw when you looked at the photo of this man."
She still had her gaze, as well as her gun, locked on him. It was pointed right between his eyes and rock-solid steady. When he shifted his weight to the other foot, the gun barrel tracked that minimal movement without the slightest deviation from its target.
"Please, Miss Constantine, what did you see when you looked at him?"
"That man is a killer."
"Are you sure?"
She glared at him a moment before speaking.
"When he was still in his teens, he had a girlfriend, Zara. She had long, straight black hair. He called her his little princess. One day she went to visit relatives. He thought she was visiting a lover. He found her cutting through an alley on her way home. He called her a whore. He hit her in the face and threw her on the ground. He straddled her and hit her with his fists as she begged him to stop. The begging excited him. He picked up a brick and used it to pound her face as hard as he could. He didn't stop until her head was smashed flat in a puddle of bone and brains and blood. Then he spotted an old man nearby who had been sleeping in the alley under some cardboard. The old man was horrified. Enraged that someone had seen what he had done, he found a piece of scrap metal, held the old man down with a knee on his chest, and used the piece of metal to gouge out the old man's eyes. Then he strangled him to death. That night, in the alley, he learned that killing was more exciting than anything he had ever done. It made him feel powerful. After he was grown, and had killed several more times, he grew bored of the place where he had been born, so he traveled to Jordan. He found that he liked the nomadic lifestyle, traveling as he wished with money he took from victims. He killed an entire household in Jordan because he could see that the husband knew him for what he was. He killed them all. Father, mother, grandfather, two children. He held them captive the entire night. Every hour or two, he started cutting on another one of them before slicing their throats. He likes bloody kills, like that first time with Zara, who he thought was a whore and had betrayed him. He killed 11 members of the Maruf family in Egypt. The mother could recognize him as a killer by looking into his eyes, just as he could look into her eyes and see her ability. He tied them up, and then bashed in their skulls with a hammer. One at a time. The children first. He likes to hear people scream in terror. They lived in an apartment over a nightclub, so that night no one heard those screams. He killed a woman in Germany, an immigrant. He could tell by her eyes that she could see the truth about him, just as I can. She had long black hair. She reminded him of Zara, his first love he thought had cheated on him. Her name was Ibada. He raped her first, stabbed out her eyes, cut out her tongue, while she was still alive. He made it last, because it had been a while since he had killed, and he was hungry to do it again. He finally cut her throat. When he was done carving on her to see what she was made of, to see if she was really Zara, his first love, inside someone else's body come to taunt him, he threw the remains off a high bank into a river. In Italy, he tracked down a man he had seen. He had recognized that same rare ability in the man's eyes. He went to the man's house in a bad neighborhood of Naples, where there was a lot of crime, and played a recording of a baby crying outside the door. When a woman, Camilla, heard it, she thought it might be her granddaughter. She was frightened for the little girl's safety. When she opened the door, without knowing it, she let death itself into her house. Her daughter was in a back room with the little girl. He slaughtered the whole family.
Do you know their last name?
Constantine. The hair on the back of Jack's neck had stood up on end. The blood had drained from his face as he'd listened. The Mossad had known some of it, but not nearly all of it. The intelligence agencies hadn't even known about some of those killings, much less suspected Casiel. They also hadn't known, of course, what drove him to kill. He was one of those super predators who hunted people with the ability to recognize him as a killer. Jack knew that the ability to recognize killers was a product of evolution, as was the ability of some killers to in turn recognize those individuals. He had theorized that the process of evolution would eventually produce people who could see into the minds of killers, see what they had done. Kate had proven his theory correct. But Angela had taken it to an entirely new level. With Angela, he was in uncharted waters. He was looking into the eyes of a new evolutionary step. He was looking into the eyes of a different kind of human. He finally mustered the courage to ask,
"Anyone else?"
"Lots."
"Anyone in particular stand out to you?"
The gun stayed steadily locked between his eyes as tears started running down her face. Her jaw trembled. Her voice came in a painful whisper.
"He killed my grandparents, Vito and Gabriella Constantine."
Jack ached at seeing her obvious pain.
"I'm so sorry."
"Tell me where I can find him."
He opened his hands.
"I don't know. That's the truth. I'm looking for him too."
"Why?"
"Among other reasons, to keep him from killing you."
"Who is he?"
"His name is Casiel Icon Corecan. He is a very dangerous man."
"No shit!"
"Miss Constantine, I came here to help you. We're on the same side. I wouldn't be here if we weren't. I'm trying to stay a step ahead of Casiel to stop him from killing again, from killing innocent people, from killing you."
"You didn't come here just to save my ass. You came here for some other reason. What do you want from me?"
"Do you really need to keep that gun pointed at me?"
"You've killed people. A lot of people. You usually use two small knives. You have one in each back pocket. You favor cutting their carotid artery so that they lose consciousness quickly and die shortly after, simple and quick. There have been times when you've had to cut tendons to cripple them first, and then go for another artery, like the femoral artery. Do you want me to tell you their names?"
"No," he said quietly. He swallowed back the anguish. "I don't need you to tell me their names."
You're a lot faster at killing than most people would believe possible. That's why I have a gun pointed at you.
Jack knew this woman was not playing games. He suspected that if he lied to her, she would know that, too.
There have been people, good people, innocent people, that I wanted to protect. People who couldn't protect themselves. People who were afraid, terrified. People like those Cassiel murdered. I killed those murderers to stop them from killing any more innocent people. If you can see in my eyes those I killed, then you must know I'm telling the truth, that they needed killing. Despite what some would say, I really don't think that's wrong. Do you?
After staring at him for a long moment, she finally clicked on the safety and raised the barrel away from him, holding the gun up against her right shoulder, pointed skyward.
No, that's not wrong at all.
Some of the tension went out of his muscles. He sagged just a little with relief. He was relieved, too, to see her finally holster the weapon at the small of her back.
There are a lot of things I'm unsure of, things I'm trying to find out to help me keep innocent people from being murdered, he told her. I think you might be able to help me. In fact, you already have, with part of it, by recognizing what kind of man Cassiel really is just by looking at his photograph.
The fury seemed to have drained out of her voice. I've never had that kind of reaction just from looking at a photo. He wondered if she had ever seen real killers and had a similar reaction.
Well, that's part of why I'm here, to help you understand all of this. I'm hoping that you, in turn, can help me understand some things.
She looked back over her shoulder when she heard the bouncer call her name. He trotted across the lot and came to a stop beside her.
You, he said, glaring at Jack. I thought I told you to leave her alone.
Angela put her arm out to stop him from going around the front of the truck to confront Jack. It's all right, Nate.
It is? Are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure. He leaned closer to look at her face.
You've been crying.
No, it's not that, she said as she pulled a tissue from her pocket and quickly wiped off the mascara running down her face. It's the smoke in there from that jerk's cigar. It made my eyes burn and they're watering, that's all. Thanks for letting me know that it's running my mascara. He didn't look to believe her.
Angela, I don't...
She put a hand on his shoulder as she smiled at Jack. He's someone I haven't seen in a very long time. It's kind of dark back in the bar, so I just didn't recognize him, especially with the smoke burning my eyes, that's all.
Nate still didn't look convinced.
Really? What's his name?
Jack realized he hadn't told her.
He immediately stretched over the hood of the truck to extend his hand.
Hi, I'm Jack Raines. I knew Angela from before, when she was younger.
Nate shook the hand.
You don't look that much older than Angela.
Jack grinned.
Why, thank you. Aren't you kind?
Angela looked from Jack's eyes back to her knight in shining armor.
Thanks, Nate. But everything's fine.
She put a hand against his chest.
Why don't you go back in and watch out for the other girls? I've had a long day. I just want to go home and get some sleep. I'll see you tomorrow.
Nate finally gave in.
Sure. Nice to meet you, Jack.
He turned toward the bar, but then turned back.
Sorry about before.
He flicked a hand toward the bar.
You know, in there, before Angela realized she knew you.
Jack flashed him a smile.
Forget about it.
Smooth, she said to Jack, once Nate had disappeared back inside. Jack turned his attention back to Angela.
Look, Miss Constantine, there are a number of serious things I need to talk to you about. I don't think we have a lot of time.
She continued to appraise him for a moment.
All right, get in the truck. I can at least hear you out. But you have to promise me first that the minute you find out where Cassiel is, you'll tell me.
Deal,
Jack said,
as he opened the passenger door. 48. Closing the doors to the truck shut out a lot of the harsh light from the street lamp. With the sounds from outside also shut out, she didn't have to talk very loud to be heard. All right. This is your chance. Talk.
Listen, Miss Constantine, you said you weren't a cop.
Not knowing her point, he paused.
I'm not.
Then stop calling me Miss Constantine, would you? Only the fucking police call me Miss Constantine. If you're not with the police, then who do you work for?
I have to admit I like Angela a lot better.
Good. I asked who you work for.
Actually, I work for myself.
Doing what? And what do you want with me?
First of all, it's obvious that you can recognize killers by seeing their eyes.
Obviously.
The first thing I need to do is to help you understand why it's possible for you to do that.
I know why I can do it. I don't need your help to understand it.
Jack hadn't expected that. He'd never met anyone before who was aware of their ability and seemed so confident in their understanding of it.
Get on with it, she said before he could think of what to say. I have someplace to go.
She'd just told Nate she wanted to get some sleep, not that she had somewhere to go.
He turned to look out at the darkness.
This late?
I asked who you work for. You weren't entirely honest in your answer. You also said that you came a long way to see me. Where did you come from?
Israel.
You live there? You work there? This is not making a lot of sense.
All right. Listen. This is important, so I'm going to take a chance here and be completely honest and upfront with you in the hope that you will do the same with me. I sometimes work for the Israeli government, the Mossad, actually. I help them stop terrorists before they can kill people. I used to do the same thing for various U.S. intelligence services, but not anymore.
You mean you're some kind of spy?
Not exactly. You need to understand there are a lot of great, dedicated people working for U.S. intelligence services. Those services used to appreciate having my help, but their bosses didn't.
Why not?
Because I help find killers by using people who can do what you can do. Well, not exactly what you can do. I've seen some people who could do quite a lot, but I've never seen anyone who could do anywhere near what you can do.
Why?
Jack held up a hand. Just listen for a moment. What I did fell out of favor for political reasons. There are people in those agencies now who would not just like to see me gone, but would like it just fine if I ended up dead.
She frowned.
Why? If you were helping them stop killers, why would they want you dead?
Probably for some of the same reasons that you don't like the police. There are good people in the intel agencies, just as there are lots of good police officers who would risk their lives to save yours.
She huffed a half laugh.
I've never met any of those. I understand. I have a somewhat similar problem. What I'm doing here with you is because I still believe that we can do some good in this world. I think that I have a purpose in this life, and my purpose is to find people like you. Do you have any idea what I mean? Do you understand?
She considered his words for a long moment. There are people among us that shouldn't be allowed to be among us.
Jack smiled. Bingo.
So the spy agencies don't approve of your methods?
No, they don't. Some people in intelligence agencies, if they could, would see to it that I was charged with murder and put away for life for stopping some of the killers I've found. Like I say, there are lots of great people in intel, but anymore I have trouble telling the good ones from the bad. So the best thing for me to do is stay off their radar.
I can understand that. I've had that same problem. Jack smiled.
Then we're much the same.
I'm telling you all this because I want you to understand that I have no intention of ever telling any authorities anything we discuss or anything about you. I don't want to get you noticed by them either. I hope you will treat me the same. People like us have to stick together.
So what are you doing here? What is it you want from me?
You heard about the terrorist attacks all over the country?
Sure.
I work all the time, so I don't listen to the news much, but I heard about it. It's all the customers in the bar have been talking about. Seems like a lot of them blame Russia and want to go to war.
People like simplistic solutions.
You think it's more complicated?
Yes.
One of those attacks, one of the big ones, was at the Oeste Mesa border crossing between Mexico and California.
He pulled a second photo out of his shirt pocket and handed it to her.
That's him, she said, after she looked back up.
That's Casiel.
Jack nodded confirmation. He was there.
She frowned back down at the photo. Why can't I see that he's a killer from this photo? See everything about him from his eyes like I could from the other one?
There is an important difference between the two photos. This one was taken by one of the automatic cameras at the border crossing just before the attack. It's a digital photo that's been digitally enhanced, enlarged, and sent over the internet. Your ability to recognize killers only works in person or with a photo printed from a negative onto photo paper.
Huh. That's weird.
Have you ever seen a photo of a killer on photo paper before, like the first one I showed you?
No.
He looked at her from under his brow. So, then you've seen a killer before? I mean, in real life? A real killer?
Yes, she said, dismissing the question by not elaborating. So, Casiel crossed during the attack?
Actually, we think he may have been part of the attack.
That doesn't make a lot of sense, she said as she looked at the blow-up of Casiel's face from the camera at the crossing.
Why do you say that?
Because he's a killer, a monster. He works alone. Killing is his passion. He is consumed by it, haunted by it. He can't go for long before his urge to kill overtakes everything else. It drives him to the point of taking foolish risks. It doesn't make any sense that he would be taking part in a terrorist attack.
See? Now that's part of the puzzle I don't understand, either. All I can figure out is that it could be he just wanted to be in on the slaughter.
Angela shook her head. No, that's not his style. He doesn't care about seeing people get killed. That's not what gets him off. It's the personal act of killing in all forms that fascinates him. He is obsessed with watching people die at his hands, whether it's cutting their throat or shooting them in the back of the head.
Jack knew she was thinking about her grandparents again, so he steered her back to the puzzle pieces he was trying to fit together.
I thought the same thing. He doesn't fit the psychological profile of a terrorist. That's why I'm at a loss as to what he was doing there, in this photo, just before the attack. The only other possibility in the back of my mind is that he might be coming back into the U.S. to kill you, and coming in with the terrorists was the simplest way. He killed members of your family in Italy. He killed your grandparents. I think he might be coming back to kill you.
He does like to kill entire families.
She finally looked back from staring out into the dark woods across the road.
Give me that photo again. The first one.
Jack handed it over and watched as she looked into Casiel's eyes, but this time for a long moment.
Nope, that's not the reason. He was careless. He killed a woman and her family, Khorshid Hamidi.
Funny, she frowned thoughtfully. I've never heard any of these names before, but I know them now simply from looking into his eyes.
You were saying he was careless?
Yes. He killed that family and was captured by Iranian authorities. She was the daughter of an imam. They were going to put him to death. He was spared to be part of this mission, this terrorist attack.
Jack sat stunned by what she was able to tell from looking at his eyes. She handed back the photo.
So what other pieces are you trying to figure out?
Well, I was in Israel helping them identify.